This is Don't DeBras Stocks. You're on the air.
Am I?
Yes.
I want to make a comment here. You think it is right for security? Well, I know you don't think it's right. But you know the security firms out there with whole employee wages and vacation money?
What happens? Don't you have the Labor Department to turn to in those circumstances?
Yeah, you got them. But the Labor Department can get them to pay you, and then they pay you every other month. They might be able to get the vacation money, but they cannot get them to pay you and then pay you every other month. And they own you. You're the employee, and they own you.
But I would think that with all the discussion that there has been about labor law in Barbados, the establishment of the Employment Rights Act and things like that, that kind of loophole should not exist. We are as a worker.
It's happening.
Have you discussed this with anybody at all?
Not yet.
But you need
but
to do
some,
that.
Some of the guys did, but then it happened.
No, but the question is, what is it? You know,
they're getting paid every other month, and the employer holding on to
who did they talk to?
The Stanley Labor Department.
You know what the Labor Department told them? Did they tell you?
No, I didn't know.
So you need to find that out.
What they tell me is that the Labor Department paying out something.
Yeah.
I mean, the employee paying out something to the Labor Department. Because they can't get the money every month. They can't pay every other month.
Yes.
And the employer holding on to their monthly salary.
No, that doesn't sound right.
They hold them some of them 5 months salary.
That much?
Yeah, 5 months. Five months and less.
No, that is serious. That is serious. And I think it's something...
They ain't paying the vacation pay. In vacation kind of guys, two years vacation pay.
Does this affect you personally?
Yes, it do affect me.
How much money are you owed?
I owe a vacation pay and a month's salary.
And how long has this been so?
Right, for the time I did there, everybody's talking about it and nothing is solved up to now.
You've been there how long? 8 years? 5 years?
No, I won't. But the guys who they got guys there longer than me, and there's elderly guys.
Wow.
The young ones left. One guy that left, he told me he left 3 months salary. He leave. The younger guy, he gets anything to do, but the elderly, where they can go? In the 60s.
Wow. That is a matter that certainly needs to be pursued. This person says, I've been sent home over a year now and owed 4 months salary. And the person says that they haven't yet received it, you know. So you're raising a matter that obviously touches a number of people.
Because everybody tight-lipped. No. Guys don't want to talk. There's many security firms. They're doing the same thing.
You think it's
underpaying you, too.
You think it's largely security firms?
That's where you're getting news from, security firms.
And especially older men are being touched by
right. It. Yeah. You're much, much more elderly.
Yeah.
That day.
Okay. Thank you very much. This person has raised an issue that is important. The next one is also important. This person says, I need clarification regarding what can be worn as it relates to colors on election day. The Electoral and Boundaries Commission should put out some kind of information to clarify for people what they can wear in circumstances where all of the colors seem to have been taken up by one party or individual. This is a matter that was raised yesterday. Why can't we get something said on this? Because there are people who are worried about turning up and having to be sent home because whatever they're wearing has in some color or the other that can create a problem. This is Down to Brass Stacks. Hello?
Good morning, David.
Yes, how are you?
I'm fair. But listen, the guy that called you not too long ago, I really find out that, you know, I am not into no different political party, not a party supporter than anyone, but I just wanted to say something. On Saturday, I was watching the royal wedding. Mm-hmm. So I had a radio in my bedroom. So when I went into the bedroom, I overheard this gentleman by the name of Commissioner saying he had on a yellow shirt and a woman in a red shirt come to tear off his yellow shirt. So on election day, if I do vote, I'm going to wear a black shirt. But I don't know, this voice on moderators is like that. The moderator asked him, and you didn't went to the police for her? You should have gone to the police for her. I mean, some moderators can show their biasness, but on your station, I don't really hear this bias going on, that how that guy was trying to say to you just now. And I mean, it is really ridiculous on that other station. Some other lady calling and was supporting him, asking her why she don't left Martley alone. And she cut off the woman. But I don't hear you all doing that to other people.
Well, you are the listeners to these programs, and I think that you're the ones who must draw us into line when we are excessive. You would appreciate that ultimately we are guided by you all. If you ever hear us take positions that you consider to be excessive, you say, look. And there are times when I've heard various comments. You take comments in stride. You make your own assessment of what is going down. But sometimes you take action in the interest of protecting the station, and people curse you. I mean, I've had, this campaign has been interesting for me. I told you already, I sometimes wonder if I'm a candidate because the amount of talk that I hear on the platform. Up to last night, somebody told me, because, you know, I can't hear everything, but sometimes people send me information. Say, boy, you hear them talking about you. But you understand politics. The whole idea here is that if they can't beat you into submission, can't get you to do exactly what they want you to do in the way that they want you to do it, then they find other means by which they are going to attack you and hope that you will be beaten into submission. You heard yesterday somebody who's been a veteran journalist talk about what happened years ago to him. This is not new. This is all part and parcel of what you go through. And you know, you just have to, you know, stand up and be firm in doing the right thing and doing the professional thing, okay? Down to brass tacks.
Yeah, hello, good morning, Miss Ellis.
Morning.
Yeah, good morning, sir. I hear you mention Hark Talk on the BBC, but don't forget those people that invited to Hark Talk are really intelligent people, the high profile people, and those people don't get trapped by the moderator as much as he wanted them to say what he wanted to say. They always avoid his way of trying to get them trapped. And when you listen to those people, you see, you can't trap those people so easy. But what I call you to talk about yesterday, Dr. Clyde Mass was on the radio for a short time. I mean, the program was coming to an end. Now, this question I would have asked him, I thought you would have asked him. The Babies apparently spoke about if they get into power, they're going to get trucks and buses, sanitation trucks and buses. What I'm wondering about is, did they mention the cost factor of what these trucks and buses will cost the government of Barbados? And the other thing is, which land in the sea are they going to go to get this loan to buy these buses and sanitation trucks? That's first. They also spoke about giving civil servants an increase of pay. Now, they don't come out and tell you how much it will cost the government to increase the civil servants' salary at this particular time in our economic downturns that we're having right now. The other thing is reprofiling your debt. And most economists overseas would tell you that reprofiling debt is when you have people who are bad debtors. In other words, you could get a situation where I borrow $300 million from you to be paid within 20 years period. But I come back to you and they say I want an extension period, which I would take the money that I would pay you every 3 months or so and invest the money to bring foreign exchange. But most of the countries that goes into reprofiling debt are countries who do fall on the debt. And this was I heard this scare bubble one time. I was listening to a program on the BBC. My question to you is now, if the barbers, they're probably making all these promises, what is the overall cost to the people of Barbados?
Well, you know, basically that question can't be for me. It got to be to the politicians. And you know what I find fascinating about all the questions that you've posed is that you behave as though they only got one manifesto on the table. I thought that there were other manifestos too, where there is a necessity to ask questions about how we are going to do what we propose to do. But that's for the politicians to answer those questions, not for me. Okay. Dr. Brastax, somebody says that the problem which has been raised by the security guard about not being able to get paid on time and vacation pay and all of that is something that the trade unions have been trying to deal with, but the firms have been combating it by a high rate of turnover. So, you know, you have so many, especially more mature men these days who are prepared to go and do that kind of work. And that's the market that is exploited in this particular manner. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Good morning, David.
Yes, good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm well, and you?
I'm good. Let me make two comments. The first thing is, this station is incredibly biased. You know what's biased to? It's biased to the truth. It's biased to giving people, everybody, the opportunity to speak and to say something regardless of how irrelevant or foolish or whatever it is. Okay? That is what I find. There are a lot of times I disagree with the manner in which you handle certain situations and in which you have the program doing certain things. You know what? I respect and I understand what you are trying to do. And the balance that you are trying to bring from your perspective to the program. And to give everybody, regardless of color, class, creed, or political side, the opportunity to have a few minutes to hear what they have to say. Okay? And I respect that. Now, this is one of the few times I have to agree almost 1,000% with some of the things that Auntie America was talking about this morning with respect to the constitutional questions. And this is what I had been trying to speak about yesterday, or in the discussion we were having yesterday when I spoke to Dennis and I said about the Constitution, the constitutional changes. And he was saying, oh, those things are found in the Constitution, or what have you. And I am like, well, a Constitution is just an agreement. It's just a piece of paper. It's just a document. And people write down whatever they want, the rules that they want to run their society by. And those rules could be anything. It is up to them to choose that.
But everything, the point that I think that Dennis was making, and he wasn't the only person who reacted that way to your comment yesterday,
mm-hmm.
Everything cannot be put in a constitution.
No.
You see, along the way, while we are driven by a constitution, there are still certain conventions that you expect will be followed in these societies. And conventions are important for responding to the people, the pulse of the people, so that once you have your ears to the ground, you listen to what people are saying, you get a sense of the drift. You may not get a majority, but you may get a sizable enough minority opinion that you say, you know what, let me modify my position on this, or this is something that I need to talk to the people about. I need to find a way to get over there and address this particular issue. So I think that was the point that was being made. You can't cover everything in a constitution.
But, David, the challenge is, one, I'm not saying you cover everything, okay? but the determination of what you cover and the importance upon which you place particular things and the frequency or lack thereof with which you change that constitution and bend that constitution is totally up to you. Okay? It is your country. You write that constitution. Look, and when it comes to the what you just said, with, oh, you have this discussion with the majority and that sort of stuff. The issues that the states are going through right now.
Example.
With gun crime or what have you.
How would you deal with that?
Because, just a second, this is what I'm trying to tell you. The major, according to your argument, you would have a discussion with the majority of the people. If the majority.
Well, let's tie it to specifics. Otherwise, right. We'll just be up in the air on this
right,
in general
but
terms.
Thing is that with gun crime, that majority discussion, that majority in the states appears to be in favor of or what have you. But you have obstacles placed like by organizations like NRA and then political contact.
I want you to make contact with an issue in Barbados that you believe needs to be put in the Constitution now.
But
anti-American, he identified a number of specific concerns that he would like to hear the political leadership on. Can you be more specific?
No, but yesterday I was being specific. And that was what prompted the response, because I was saying that I want to see written in our Constitution a situation where there has to be political debate or what have you, whether in whatever form it is, for when it comes to the election or whatever, that the leaders, the prospective leaders, must have a debate or something like that. That was what it was trying to say, that they want to see written in Constitution. Because as it stands right now, people are able to avoid these sort of conversations. And
the test here is what is the price you pay for avoiding an issue? If you can avoid an issue because people are not sufficiently concerned about it, then you will remain silent.
Right, but you see, the price that we have paid is for all of this, but the lack of transparency is more or less what is happening. Okay, that we see continues and that allows all this corruption, all the misunderstanding, and all those things to thrive. Because we don't have those conversations.
Yeah, I want to submit to you, my friend, is driven to a large extent by that point that I raised about sensitivity. You have politicians who recognize the value of getting out there and tackling something that has the potential to harm them. Then you have politicians who feel, I don't worry about that. I will deal with that in my own time. Now, either way, you're taking a risk because sometimes you can step out too early and make more of an issue than it ought to be made of. And alternatively, you can sit back, allow something to gain root, and by the time you decide that you're going to respond to it, it's too late. Too many people have already absorbed it and have come to believe it, and it becomes part and parcel of their psyche. So the key to this is timing, to know exactly when to speak. There was an issue in this campaign which has been raised, and it has had no legs whatsoever. It has no legs because there was no engagement on it, all right? And the quest to get somebody to talk about it, you know, was strong. But as we speak now, just 2 days before the elections, that issue is dead. So that's an example of how if you ignore certain things, they go nowhere. However, if the person who is making the allegation can make a strong enough case and can produce evidence and chapter and verse that you did X or Y, then you can't ignore it. You understand? It depends upon the strength of the argument.
But David, I understand the things you're saying, okay? And you're looking at it from the politician's point of view. But what I'm trying to look at it from is what I would like to see in a new administration coming in who wants to make the claim that they want to take Barbados.
Yeah, well, you know what? We're going to have to wait until Thursday to see where we go with that. I think that this discussion would be better had Friday if I'm here for Brass Tacks on Friday, okay? Hello, welcome to the program. Down to brass tacks, going until 1:30 today. Hello? You're on the air.
Hi, good morning, Mr. Ellis. How are you?
Morning, I'm well. And you?
I'm good, too. I'm good. I don't know if you're aware, but the other station have taken the decision to run their program 7 days a week and bring their political analyst for 3 days.
Who's that?
Leading up to the...
Who's that political analyst?
Their political analyst.
Who's that?
For 3 days leading up to the election.
And?
Which is something I've been calling for you to do for the longest while. To increase it and not decrease it. It has been done.
Well, fine.
Okay.
And as you said, and as you just said, and I don't even know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. You might think that you're number one, and you might find that you lose that position. That's
okay,
all it would
be. We take our chances.
Anyhow, last Monday I had told you that I had some articles in the newspaper to look at with you. And lo and behold, we barely get a chance to look at one. And because it was so sweet, we ain't get no more. I look at yesterday's paper, expected that I would see at least a correction on one, and I didn't see it. So I can take a look at it now. Sunday last week, Edward Allen, in his article, and here again, he falls for the same thing as Mr. Wickham, trying to get it to say what he wanted to say. And he took a look at leaders that took over from other leaders and then went into elections. And he, in his wisdom, say that Mr. Sandy Ferdinand Lloyd took over from Errol Barrow, went on and win his first election, and then lost his second. Now, you know that's not correct. But it is there in black and white. Now, I just don't have a problem for myself because I was around a long time, and I know. But my children and my grandchildren would be misled when they read that in black and white. So I expected we would see some correction to it.
Well, tell him what the correction is.
Well, Sandy Ford led in one election and won it. You only led one and won it, so I don't know who got the second one. Then he went on to Mr. Stewart. And here again, he said that he took over from Thompson, and he won his election by a 1-seat majority. That also is incorrect.
It was by 2 seats.
Well, by 2 seats. Yes, yeah, this is the thing that I just listen out for the fourth estate to correct itself. And it don't happen. You see, they're in black and white now to mislead who wasn't wrong or who don't know. When he went, then Mr. Short went before the Governor General, he went with a 2-seat majority, a 16 to 14. When Parliament get configured, because you got to put up one for the Speaker, you can consider that you lose one, although if you need to, you can get it back. So, you know, you don't just mislead people for the sake of doing it, just to get it to be salacious and say what you want to say. And these are the things that is bothering me, and that's why you've got to come and call for some balance. It ran the whole week because nobody else didn't pick it up, nobody else didn't say nothing on it. It ran for the whole week. I expect it would have been corrected yesterday, but I read yesterday, I ain't seen a correction either. Just like the one that I tell you was so sweet, that you know nobody ain't comment on that either. You got a historian that has come out there, and he know all about the sugar crop. But you know he ain't said nothing. He ain't said nothing about you, the best first man ever. He ain't said nothing. And you probably, I don't know if you come on, you ain't asking, nobody ain't asking. I expect everybody to hear a lot from him about the sugar crop. And you ain't get nothing. Not to soil it on pick the tea. And we just let the whole week run I like them there. And these are the sort of things that has happened, Mr. Ellis.
Okay.
And I'll show you something else that annoyed me too. Now, we was promised a Christmas election. It did not materialize. And lo and behold, right after New Year's there, we had this country splash with posters ready to serve. And they remained there until the bell rang. Then when the bell rang, a second set went up. And all that they wrong with the first set is that there was a little leather beaten, you know, a little etch out from the worn.
Mm-hmm.
Not one of them didn't tear down, nothing did wrong with them.
And?
The second set went up, and nothing went wrong with them neither.
You say but that to time, say what?
But from the time a third set went up, tearing down start. From the time the third set went up, Mr. Ellis. But the Lord don't like ugly. And he is the great equalizer, so he would deal with that.
Okay. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. And you?
I'm okay. Just two quick points. The first one is on the Electoral and Boundaries Commission and the dress code.
Yeah.
They have issued a dress code, but it is restricted to the workers of the Electoral and Boundaries Commission on that day. Of course, in light of the concern, it would be good if they could inform the general public. Because
they need to put out some kind of reminder or some kind of notice that, you know, will clarify for people exactly what has happened. For whatever reason, there seems to be some element of concern and confusion on some people's part. So just clarify it. Simple.
Yeah, because this election is unique with the number of candidates, a number of colors have been taken up. But I can tell you that the workers were told that they can wear black, brown, white, I think one or two other colors. But my major point this morning is about the statement by the Prime Minister in terms of the CCJ. It is the most unfortunate statement. The quotation about the politicians in robes is a sad one. The fact of the matter is that the constitution of the court with either 7 or 9 justices was formulated to ensure that there's always an objective and a decision made that the accusation cannot be made that it is political. As I understand it, 5 of the justices are appointed from outside of CARICOM. And the second thing is that in terms of the viability of the court was established with a U.S. $200 million trust fund. And those funds have been invested, and the interest gained from those funds ensures the financial viability and independence of the court. Now, as regards to the Privy Council, Barbados has crossed the Rubicon. We cannot go back. It is sad, however, that a number of CARICOM countries have not seen it fit to join the court as their final arbiter.
But let me say to you that the big hurdle that would be faced with this. Let's go back to 1974 and the amendments to the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
That created so much controversy in Barbados because the Prime Minister was taking unto himself the power to appoint what were described then as puny judges.
And we've paid the price ever since.
All right. There remains a lot of concern in this country. And the way that this is going down right now, I doubt very much that you could have that kind of transition that the Prime Minister is alluding to without a lot of discussion in Barbados about it. And where could it leave Barbados? Because it is not about whether you're talking about a BLP or a DLP administration.
It's about the image of Barbados, yes.
We are talking about a situation where tomorrow, 4 years, 5 years from now, a decision would have to be made that raises the specter of political interference and that sort of thing. And even when people set out with the best of intentions to be fair, reasonable, and balanced in everything that they're doing in decisions of that nature, there is still the perception and the fear of bias, all right? So to go and tell me that you're going to create the highest court in Barbados in a manner where it seems as though you are a law unto yourself as a country, to me that seems as though you got a lot of selling to do. But the first order of business in all of this is that you got to win the government.
Oh, so yes, of course.
Let us see what happens Thursday, and then we'll be in a position to talk about what happens to Barbados and the Caribbean Court of Justice.
Good point. I'll just make a final comment. This election is most unusual. I do not think that in the history of Barbados that we've seen an election like this. The extension of the parliament, which was dissolved as opposed to prorogued, and its implications. And then, of course, the number of candidates. But I believe in Barbadians, and I believe that on voting day, they will do the right thing. Remember, Vox Populi, Vox Dei. The voice of the people is the voice of God. Enjoy your day, sir.
Thanks for your call. Down to brass tacks. You're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Welcome to the program.
Yes, Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Yes. There are just two questions I would like to ask. I'm not a regular caller to the program. So
sure.
First, the thing with the non-contributory pensions that the Barbados Labour Party said it was going to raise non-contributory pensions.
Mm-hmm.
Was it $225?
I think that's where it's going to.
$225?
Yeah.
And it's get these non-contributory pensions every 2 weeks, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so $225 and $225 is $450 and not $900. Because I hear some mass that says it was $900 a month. You didn't hear that mass, though?
I can't remember. Well, what is your concern, though?
No, it's just that the mass, I mean the mass that is being put out there. Remember that the Minister of Finance did say that he would stop working if he get $900 a month. I don't understand why you can't remember that, Mr. Ellis.
Don't worry about what I remember and don't remember. Make your point.
All right, just one of the funny mass, if it's $225 every 2 weeks, that $225 is every 2 weeks is just $450 a month and not $900. And also, the opposition again put a proposal for refinancing the debt, and if they say they will refinance the debt, they'll be able to do a number of things like buy buses and trucks and things. They've been pillared all about this country for saying this, to grant this idea that it could save money, including yesterday's paper. I thought I see Professor Michael Howard when they looking at the two manifestos. Did you read that yesterday's paper, sir?
Yeah.
And he was saying that the BLP proposal is unrealistic. You know, that you've got to do like austerity to get your thing. You've got to contain with austerity. But the austerity thing has worked well for Greece, isn't it?
Austerity.
If you look at the Greek situation, where there have been austerity for about 10 years now, and they have been cutting pensions and cutting public workers and cutting everything, and still the European Union, the IMF, have had to keep drawing down funds into the trillions of dollars now that they admit they'll never be able to repay, because they're keeping austerity and the economy not growing. And so economic activity is slowed right down. No investments is coming into the country that kind. There'll be a few startups. If you listen to the BBC or anything, they've got a few startups. In Greece, that's a good thing for them. But there's very little economic activity because of the austerity in Greece. And they've been getting money with the austerity, still haven't been making any money. How we are going on this DLP regime.
May I ask you something? Is there anything that you're hearing from the Barbados Labour Party to suggest that we still won't be in a process of austerity, though? The proposals are one thing, but do those proposals by themselves suggest to you that Barbados is going to come out of a program of austerity? I would not interpret it that way.
But we have been going one way for the past 10 years, and we are stuck. All the different midterm and long term. All the different things that the president government has come up with hasn't worked. But I guess look at today's paper. I would assume that this lady that write this thing don't dismiss debt refinancing and thing by Marion Williams. I would think that the former governor of the central bank.
That's correct.
And she's saying exactly what Mr. Marshall has been saying. Don't hurt the end here. It's on ways to discourage government from using the refinancing option. There's overwhelming evidence of the benefits, but refinancing cannot be the only solution. It can release resources for meeting expenditures, including new expenditures. And this is all if you would go back. I mean, your company is part of the Nation Corporation. And you could go back and put up all the articles that Mr. Masker has been writing on Thursdays as the spokesman of finance for the opposition BLP, and see that Mr. Masker has been telling this present government that the road it was traveling with all the large tax grabs that they have been making wasn't ever going to work. You know? It wasn't ever going to work. And it has not worked. From 2008, when I started, I had a van that I was paying $365 for, or $375, whatever it is. And the next, after the first budget, the next I had to pay $900 in road tax. I went to school at school up St. Joseph, so I ain't so bright. So I can't work out with the percentage increase that was. You probably could work it out for me. If you had a little bicycle, the thing went from about $6 or $7 to $20-something. All those small shops. And from then till now, they have been taxing and taxing. And what where has it brought us?